Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Labor Day, the 7th of September. We're going to talk about the Milky Way this hour, and our guest is the author of a piece that is the cover story for Astronomy Magazine, published right here in the Milwaukee area. The piece is The Milky Way. After a centuries-long mystery, scientists have found our galaxy's true shape. Liz Cruzy is our guest, author of the piece and associate editor of Astronomy Magazine. And we'll be welcoming phone calls for Liz during the course of this hour. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email address, if you'd like to send us one of those, is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Hi, Liz. Thanks so much for being with us.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi. Yeah, nice to have you on the air with us. In the 70s, you write, astronomers were mapping the galaxy's spiral structure and they happened upon a mystery. Why don't we start with the mystery that they discovered some years ago?
The mystery is that the outer stars in our galaxy and many other spiral galaxies, really all spiral galaxies, seem to be going too fast for the amount of gravity or the amount of mass that the stars themselves have. So for these stars to be going so fast, there must be some sort of invisible mass out there holding these stars in place so that they're not flung out of the galaxies.
Huh.
And, yeah, there's been evidence starting really in the 30s, and the 70s is pretty much the clincher. They've found all sorts of evidence in the last few decades. And actually, the cover story in November will be talking a lot more about this invisible matter called dark matter. We know that we cannot see it because it does not emit any radiation, does not absorb radiation, does not reflect radiation, but astronomers can detect it with gravity. And what it is, they're not really sure yet.
So, what is it called?
Dark matter.
Dark matter.
Huh. Yeah.
So we're learning about it.
Yes.
How do we learn about it? How do you learn about dark matter from the Milky Way, which is so many hundreds of thousands of light years away?
Well, I mean, they can, by mapping, figure out the mass that this dark matter must have. So our galaxy must contain about 90% of the galaxy's mass, 85 to 90% is in this dark matter. So they're looking, the way that they initially learned about it is they map these outer stars and notice their velocities. So it's called a rotation curve. It's the velocities versus the distance out. And so by studying the amount of mass in the galaxy, and they're also looking at galaxy clusters, which pretty much show the same type of thing. There's definitely some sort of invisible mass that's holding all of these galaxies in place. Same with other spirals, dwarf galaxies. Really, every galaxy out there contains this dark matter. Mm. And they tend to look for it just given the effects on the luminous objects, such as the stars, or in a galaxy cluster, the mm-hmm. actual galaxies.
Mm. Who gave it the Milky Way? Who gave it its name?
Milky Way, that's a long debated. I think Via Lactea, centuries ago, millennium ago, people noticed this sort of milky, I guess, path in the sky. And there are all sorts of stories as to what it was initially called or who named it. But that path that you see, which actually, if you look out at a dark site, probably can't do it directly in Milwaukee, but if you go out into the country, look up, you'll see this milky path across the sky mm-hmm. overhead at night. And that corresponds to our galaxy's disk, which is chock full of stars.
How many?
Billions, hundreds of billions of stars. That's debated too, maybe 100 billion to 400 billion. Again, astronomers aren't quite sure on the number. They can't just go out and count them all individually, but there's a whole lot of stars out there.
There are a lot of stars out there. Is it harder? I've heard from people, and I've been able to see it way out in the country, but I've heard from people that it's a little bit more difficult, no matter where you are, maybe this isn't true, to see the Milky Way these days.
Oh, yes. Light pollution.
Is it?
That's pretty much, because light pollution is just getting worse in the country, especially in more urban areas. If you go out to the southwest, there are a few dark sky sites. Flagstaff, Arizona is actually one. They have specific type of cutoff lights that make sure that the light goes down instead of up into the sky. So they're in the forefront of helping with this light pollution problem. But, yeah, if you look at images of the United States of America at night, it's very heavily light polluted, of course, in New England area and Chicago, Milwaukee, any of the big cities. So if you go out to the southwest or the center of the Great Plains, you should be able to get a really good view. And I've seen it from the Adirondack Mountains, and it's just, if you can see that, it's really pretty incredible.
Hmm. What did you see there that you hadn't seen before?
Pretty much just the view of knowing that it is the disk of our Milky Way. It's the plane of our Milky Way disk. And you can see these clouds of stars and dark nebulae kind of weaving through. And those dark nebulae are actually clouds of dust that block the star's light. And so just seeing that and really seeing the structure edge on is pretty incredible when you think about the size of that and what it is.
Mm-hmm. It's huge, isn't it? It's remarkable when you can see it, to look at how large it is.
Oh, yeah. Our Milky Way disk, again, after decades of research, astronomers have determined that the luminous part of the disk, so this is not counting that dark matter that surrounds or that is embedded in the galaxy, but the luminous part is about 120,000 light years. Our nearest star, Alpha Centauri, or the Alpha Centauri system, is about 4 light years away.
Hmm.
So keep that in perspective. It's pretty huge. The sun is about 26,000 light years from the center of our galaxy. And then when you factor in dark matter, which is, again, that invisible mass that seems to be kind of holding the galaxy together, astronomers sometimes call it the scaffolding.
Hmm.
That even extends about 3 times farther out. So its diameter is somewhere around 300,000 to 500,000 light years.
Is there a black hole in the middle of it?
Yes. Supermassive black hole with about 3 to 4 million solar masses. So it's pretty big, lies at the center of our galaxy. And the way astronomers have determined that is they look at the movements of those stars really close into the center. And so by noticing how fast they're orbiting that center point, and by knowing what kind of stars they are and therefore their masses, each of the stars' masses, they can calculate the mass of that other object that it must be orbiting. And so they determine that there's a very large object, again, 3 to 4 million solar masses at the center of our galaxy, and it doesn't emit light, visible light. It does, if it ever swallows anything, any star or any gas or dust, it'll emit of an X-ray blast. But our supermassive black hole is pretty tame, so we don't really have much of that radiation.
Hmm. How clear are the images? You write in the article that astronomers now can see through the dust that you've described and study the motions of the stars that are near the core of the Milky Way. Is that a significant advancement?
Oh, yeah. Infrared radiation. So what we can see with our eyes is visible light, optical light. When I talk about radiation, it's all part of the electromagnetic spectrum. When you go to the doctor's office, you're getting an X-ray. So that's higher energy than what we see with our eyes. The next lower energy than visible light is infrared. Below that is radio. Infrared has been... The key to infrared is it has longer wavelengths than visible light. And visible light tends to be blocked by any of that gas and dust because of the fact that the gas and dust particles are roughly the same size as the wavelength of visible light. And so the visible light will just kind of bounce back and forth. It's not going to go anywhere. We cannot see it if it's blocked, you know, if there's a lot of gas and dust in the way. However, infrared has a longer wavelength, so it can make it through, well, most of that radiation can make it through the gas and dust unimpeded. And it's shown us, you know, stars emit not just invisible wavelengths. They emit in infrared not as strongly as they do in invisible, but so you can see this slight infrared signature and therefore count up the stars, see the stellar movement, see the movement of these stars, and interpret what's going on behind that veil of gas and dust.
Hmm. That's remarkable. What's the significance of the, and I wonder if you believe this is true, I've read that the Milky Way is almost the same age as the universe itself. It's just a little newer. Mm-hmm. Is that right, and what does that mean?
Scientists have determined that the universe is roughly 13.7 billion years old. They've determined that through a number of studies, mostly of the cosmic microwave backgrounds, which is a kind of relic radiation left over from the Big Bang itself. So they think that the galaxy, or Milky Way galaxy, is maybe about 10 billion years old.
Hmm.
Some estimates put it at about 8 billion years old. But it is fairly old, but there's a lot. Well, it's very old, but there's a lot that happened between that 13.7 billion years and then the 10 billion years. I mean, you have to, these giant gas clouds eventually coalesce, create stars, which, create star clusters, which eventually coalesce, and you have just larger and larger structures as time goes on.
Hmm. We're going to welcome phone calls for you, and let me give our listeners the phone number. We're talking about the Milky Way this hour of the program. It's on the cover of the October issue of Astronomy Magazine. The Milky Way, after a centuries-long mystery, scientists have found our galaxy's true shape. Our guest is Liz Cruzy. She's associate editor of Astronomy Magazine, is the author of the piece that we just mentioned. And it, if you have any questions about the Milky Way and how old it is and what we've learned about it and the questions about other galaxies and where has been, yeah, this might be fun to find out the best view that you've had of the Milky Way, be you in, well, I know you're listening all over, but most of you are either in Wisconsin or Iowa or Michigan or Illinois, so the best places you've seen for viewing and the best time for viewing as well. We'd like to hear from you. 800-486-8655 is the number. The email address is talk@wpr.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to phone calls now for Liz, and let's start with Ken from Oshkosh. Hi, Ken.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have not had a chance, of course, to read the young lady's article. Appreciate her effort. But it again, kind of, to me, displays the hubris of science. Alternate explanations for the quick-traveling stars on the rim of the galaxy would be that perhaps we don't understand the laws of physics as well as we think we do. And as far as the dark matter, truthfully, I've heard of that more as a intragalactic problem rather than an inner. But the thing is, according to some of the formulas that would be used to determine the size of an event horizon of a black hole, the entire galaxy may well be within an event horizon. So perhaps our very ability to observe is flawed by the fact that we are actually within a diluted event horizon of the hole at the center. And for the moderator, because I've heard you on other shows with scientists, there's a great, I think they put it out in two-volume sets now, called Music of the Spheres. If you really want to get a basic understanding, not only of cosmology, but all the way down to physics, I would definitely suggest the Milky Way is not 100,000 light years away from us. We're in it.
Right.
And so it's not away from us at all. So just on the hubris of what science is postulating and the fact that it is a belief system, and they seem to have some kind of tendency they're going towards, and in the process they shut off whatever theory doesn't happen to equate with what they seem to be believing.
Liz?
So there are definitely some scientists who do not believe that dark matter exists. They, as you stated, said that our laws of physics may be flawed. We may not understand gravity as well as we think. You know, we've had quite a few different paradigm shifts regarding what gravity is and how it affects other objects. So these scientists think that we may have modified Newtonian dynamics. It's called MOND, M-O-N-D. And using their calculations, it can account for, you know, these odd stellar orbits in the outer portions of galaxies. So there definitely is another theory, and there are conferences each year for people who aren't so sure that the Big Bang occurred and aren't so sure that dark matter and this even more bizarre dark energy exists, because this is one situation of science where, okay, so things are weird. We're not entirely sure what's going on. Here's our best thought. So it's something that doesn't, it definitely brings in theory more than a lot of hypotheses have in the past. And so a lot of people don't agree with it, and they do have conferences each year discussing other possibilities for these very bizarre theories. Now, dark matter, the thing is, there has been a whole lot of evidence that points toward it. It's not just the way these stars are orbiting at the outer regions of galaxies. There's something called gravitational lensing, which if you look at a really massive star or really massive galaxy cluster, I think it's Abel. I'm not very good at remembering right off the top of my head. Some of the Abel galaxy clusters are huge. And if you look at them, you'll see sort of these arcs around them, around the core. And those arcs, astronomers have actually noticed that they can calculate how far away, or those arcs are actually lensed objects. So they're more distant than the galaxy cluster, but because of the galaxy cluster's gravity, it bends the light in the same way. It's bending space-time. It's, that all goes from Einstein's theory of general relativity. And so you have these images of galaxies that are bent, and they're all the exact same galaxy, just different images. So in order to do that, there's no way that the mass, the luminous mass in those galaxy clusters can do it. Again, yeah, we could probably not understand gravity as well as we think, but there have been a lot of images. The Bullitt cluster, which came out a few years ago in news, and a few other three-dimensional maps that astronomers have made, which really do point toward dark matter's existence. Of course, we need to discover what it is before we have, yeah, before we're 100% sure, because, you know, like any theory, it's great in science to try to argue these theories to make the scientists prove it with direct evidence. So, yeah, There definitely, I've been rambling a lot, but there definitely could be, it could be the fact that we just don't understand gravity as well as we think we do.
Thanks, Ken, for the call. Robert from Eau Claire is next. Hi, Robert.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
My question was, you're talking about the Big Bang Theory and how old the universe is, 13.7 billion or whatever it was, and how do we get that number, seeing how, you know, it's just a theory? You know, like the Big Bang Theory is just a theory. How do we get the number 13.7 billion?
A lot of it comes from astronomers see the material that's in the galaxy, and they know how long it must have taken to create these, you know, ginormous galaxy clusters. There's also the cosmic microwave background, which I mentioned, that's the relic radiation left over from the Big Bang. They can figure out how distant that is, and it's about 13.6 billion years away. And so they know that, again, they can extrapolate back how long it took to form that and figure out roughly when the Big Bang occurred, or presumably occurred. Again, it's all theory. No one was around to witness it. But it really is one of the strongest theory that astronomers have.
And thank you very much for the call. You talk about, for decades in your article, astronomers believe that our galaxy has four major arms, but we've learned it doesn't.
Yes. This is another very debated topic in astronomy. A group actually based out of University of Wisconsin, Madison, and Eau Claire, it's called the GLIMPSE survey. It's part of the Spitzer Space Telescope, which is an infrared scope. They have seen that two of the arms seem to have a lot of active star formation going on, a lot of old stars, a lot of new stars, and then two of the other ones are kind of, they're weaker. They don't have as much going on. So how they interpret this is that really there are two major arms and two minor arms. We still have four arms. It's just, it definitely creates a different picture. So now the illustrations of the Milky Way are, you know, show two much thicker, more active arms and two much thinner arms. That was announced in 2008, and there was a study announced, I think it was January of 2009, which I think was a radio study looking at gas clouds and their movements in the Milky Way, and that showed that there are four arms that are roughly the same size. So it's, I think most astronomers tend to go with the two major arms, two minor arms, but again, it's debated. And we definitely have some more research regarding this. But the GLIMPSE survey was pretty pretty detailed.
Let's go to Susie from New Berlin next. Hi, Susie.
Hi.
Hi.
You were asking before the best places anybody saw, you know, that any of us have viewed Milky Way or, you know, stars, whatever. My nephew happens to be in the mountains of Afghanistan right now, and when he got there, they weren't quite so busy as they are now. And he had built a telescope in high school in Edgerton. He says something about some people's education systems being better than others. But anyway, he got permission from his upper got to rummage through pieces of leftover equipment and things and built himself a telescope out of, like, missile shells and, you know, the outside and duct tape. And he got his brother, who lives in San Diego, that wouldn't matter, but got his brother to send him some lenses. And he made the eyepiece evidently out of the bottom of a glass bottle, ground it down enough, and he made himself a really nice telescope and sent us some photos that he took of the moon. But he said the stars and everything are just so spectacular from there when there's no sand, you know, when there's no sandstones, mm-hmm. because that's the only thing that impedes it. They're way up in the mountains. There's no cities anywhere near mm-hmm. them. And he said he's been to Iceland, and he hadn't seen stars as well as he's seen while he's in Afghanistan. So I guess there's no accounting for where you get to see things, you know? Yeah,
that's quite a story, Susie.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, it's pretty cool. The eyepiece for sure is made pretty heavily out of duct tape, but it works. And it's a great little telescope he's got. So
he's got a great mind, and thank goodness for duct tape, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, that's neat. Did he post the pictures at all? It would be neat to see those.
Well, he did to some of us in the family, and maybe it's on Facebook on his account, but I don't know. He said he was going to try to get to write to, what is it, Sky and Space magazine? Something like that. Okay. But I don't know if he had time to, because just after he did that, then it got pretty busy.
Oh.
I'd rather he duck and cover them.
Yes. You know? By all means. Well, but when he gets back, we'd love to post them on our website, too. And cool. I'm sure that you'd like to see them,
yeah.
Liz.
Oh, yeah. Astronomy.com.
Right.
Yeah. Well, if he has the chance, I'm sure he'll do a little more with it. But like I said, I don't know how much he's been able to do with it lately because they've been pretty busy. So.
Right. Thank you, anyway, Susie. Yeah. Thank you so
sure.
much for calling.
Sure.
So there's the answer. It's the mountains of Afghanistan,
yeah.
huh?
Oh, yeah. No light pollution, I'm sure.
Right. Too many of us will get there. Thanks for the call. We go to Annalise from Green Lake. Hi, Annalise.
Hi. I'm a sophomore in high school, and we had a recent science assignment that we were supposed to look up some a new innovation in science, and a classmate of mine had gone online and he found some stuff about dark energy,
mm-hmm.
and he mentioned something called the Big Rip Theory. And I was wondering if there was any relevance between that and dark matter as well.
Dark energy, so again, using observations of the cosmic microwave background, the relic radiation of the Big Bang, astronomers have a pretty good idea, again, it's not set in stone, but that our universe is made up of about 5% of ordinary matter, which is the stars, the gas, the dust, the galaxies, black holes, and then about 23% is made up of this dark matter, and then 72% is made up of something called dark energy. Now, if you think dark matter is mysterious, dark energy really is. Our universe, about 10, 11 years ago, astronomers found evidence that our universe is actually, well, we knew it was expanding since the 1930s. But they found evidence that it's accelerating. So they really aren't sure what is causing this acceleration, so they termed it dark energy to kind of go along with the whole dark matter thing. It's some sort of force, some sort of energy force that is accelerating the expansion of the universe. Now, if it ends up being, if it ends up increasing dramatically, the percentage, it does change throughout the span of the universe, because if you look at observations of structures some 7-8 billion years ago, it doesn't seem to have quite the same effect. So there must not have been such a fast expansion in the universe. So this will change throughout time, and if it gets progressively more dark energy dominated and really accelerates at this huge pace, the universe could potentially rip apart. I mean, this would be 55 billion years from now. So there's nothing to worry about. That is one possibility. It could potentially happen that would result in the Big Rip.
Anything else, Annalise?
Well, I had also wondered about there was a program on NOVA about the Andromeda and Milky Way galaxies kind of rushing together and the mm-hmm. possibility of a collision.
Yes. Astronomers see that while the universe is expanding and most galaxies are receding from each other, the galaxies in our local group, it's about 35 galaxies that we know of, where the Milky Way and the Andromeda galaxies are the largest two. Then there's a number of smaller dwarf satellite galaxies. Those galaxies are close enough that gravity actually overcomes this dark energy. So gravity will keep them together as the universe is expanding. Not just that, but because of the Milky Way and Andromeda's masses, they're actually moving toward each other. So the estimate is in maybe about 5 billion years, they will eventually come toward each other and merge.
Ooh, and then what would happen?
And, well, we luckily won't be, well, I guess not luckily, but we probably won't be around to see that. They'd, because of their gravity, they probably will have almost swing around each other a few times and before they merge. And while it seems like there'd be a lot of star-to-star collisions, our stars in, you know, stars in the Milky Way and the stars in the Andromeda Galaxy, there's actually a whole lot of space in between the two. So probably it would just get around the core. We'd have a lot more stuff going on. A lot more material would go into our black hole and Andromeda's black hole. Eventually the black holes would merge, and our two galaxies would create not a spiral galaxy, which is what we currently are, along with Andromeda, but it would create a very large elliptical galaxy. So be not spherical, but close to spherical, and all the stars would, the arm structure would be gone, but the stars would still be there.
Huh. All right, thanks very much for your call, Annalise. That was interesting. And, yeah. And you talk about these 35 other galaxies in our local group. What is this local group, and how much do we know about those galaxies, and how have we detected them?
The local group is constantly growing, not because the actual galaxies are growing, but because astronomers keep finding fainter and fainter dwarf galaxies. So Andromeda and the Milky Way are the two main anchors of the local group. A group of galaxies are, I think it's 3 to 4 and up to tens of galaxies. So they're a gravitationally bound system, essentially, smaller than a galaxy cluster, which can contain hundreds and thousands of galaxies. The Triangulum Galaxy is probably it's about the next in size. I'm not sure exactly what the percentage is. But it's definitely much larger than dwarf galaxies, but it's much smaller than Andromeda and the Milky Way. All of these smaller galaxies, they find stars and they look at their spectrum. They break apart the light and into this rainbow of light, which shows all the different colors, and they can determine from that how fast the stars are moving, if they're all moving together, and if they are, that implies, you know, they're part of the same stellar system, which is probably a galaxy. Mm-hmm. And they're small, definitely compared to, and they're larger than globular clusters, which are star clusters within our galaxy, because these are separate galaxies. They're not fully bound by the Milky Way or by Andromeda, but so these separate stellar cities, these dwarf galaxies, they know of probably about 30, and they just keep finding more and more because the observations get better and the tools get more detailed.
Right. Let's go to Clark from West Bend next. Hi, Clark.
Oh, good morning. Good morning. Well, yeah, it's fascinating to listen about these things, and I've been interested in them for years. I was going to give you a couple examples of my experiences in seeing the Milky Way, and then but the the books I've read on it and so forth are really fascinating. But when I was very young, probably 06 or 07, we lived out in the country. And I didn't go out that much at night, but there was one evening that was a family get-together, and we got home about 2 a.m. and pulled up, and, of course, the sky was black as could be, and just looked up and saw this incredible band of stars dancing across the sky. And just from then on, I was just thrilled with the whole idea of the Milky Way. And then many, many years later, I was on a camping trip with the YMCA, and we went up to Banff, up in Canada, and turns out that a fellow and I got separated from the group, and we had to walk up this mountain in the middle of the night.
And oh, my gosh.
In a dark sky. And we're walking along, and after an hour or so, and I looked up, and I could not believe, again, the Milky Way stretching from horizon to horizon, just as brilliant as could be. And then at right angles to it, going across the sky, was the Aurora Borealis.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my.
Creating this gigantic cross, big X across the sky, and we just looked up and just were just, it, even today, I even think about it, and I get chills. Just, what a wonderful deal was.
Did you find the group?
Oh, eventually, yes, we did. We ended up, it was an interesting walk. And just one more little thing, I'm currently reading a book about Carl Sagan, and of course, he was a wonderful spokesperson for all things outer space. And it went in the book. He says, you know, I never did say billions and billions. Whether or not he really did or not, I don't know. But that was it was one of his disclaimers.
Okay.
Anyway, I appreciate very much all this information, and keep us all informed.
Thanks. Yeah, you give us a great image. It's interesting how people have remembered that from years and years and years ago, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, those are extraordinary experiences, and to remember the feeling that you had when you saw them. Our number is 800-486-8655, and let's go to Carl next from Madison. Hi, Carl.
Hi, Kathleen. I know you'll accept a question or entertain a question with a bit of whimsy. I hope your guests will, too. I've got two questions, actually. One kind of serious. Well, not serious, but it's just a piece of information. A week ago or so, I heard one of the astronauts, not on the current mission, I don't think, say that when somebody had returned after a EVA extravehicular activity, say that you could definitely tell when they were back in the space station because of a peculiar odor that they generated. And I was wondering, maybe that's the smell of nothing. Maybe that's the smell of dark matter or dark energy.
Maybe it is. What do you think, Liz?
Good theory, but probably not, because the dark matter and the dark energy, we don't really see its effects around our own planet, because the gravity of our sun really counteracts or overtakes that. It's much stronger because the sun is so much closer. So definitely not dark energy.
Okay. Yeah, my second question is, and it's difficult for me, I could get into geometry, but if you think of a circle of 360 degrees, do the arms of the of our Milky Way, how many degrees do they continue around? I mean, is it 180, you know, 90 degrees, full 360 or even more?
It seems like they're, again, this is all, they can't observe the whole thing, because if they observe toward the center of our galaxy, you can't see what's beyond that. So they have sort of a limited, about 270-degree view of our galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
But they seem to go, at least from illustrations, off of, you know, based on the scientific data, they definitely go 270 degrees. They do not wind more than 360. And that is definitely for sure. They do tend to trail the rotation. So our galaxy is rotating one direction, and the arms are trailing. And they, like I said, they don't wrap more than one time all the way around, but they have a limited view.
Thank you.
Thanks very much. Thanks for the whimsy, Carl. Always could use whimsy. It's a good word, too. More phone calls in a moment. 800-486-8655. Mapping the Milky Way, the cover story in the October issue of Astronomy Magazine. The author of the piece and associate editor of Astronomy Magazine, Liz Cruzy, is our guest. This is the Ideas Network. We go back to phone calls. Earl from Medford is next. Hello, Earl.
Hello, good morning. And a great magazine, Astronomy. I've had it years and years and years.
Thank you.
And we had an experience with the Mauna Kea, the big island. The observatory is way on top of the mountain.
Mm-hmm.
To see the Milky Way, it was just incredible.
Oh, yeah, that's at about 14,000 feet, so that would be a pretty good view.
We had to adjust. It was like 90 degrees down on the down in the lowlands there on the big island. But when we got up there, it was like 30.
Ooh.
But it was just, it's indescribable. Even pictures in your great magazine can't fully convey that. But the thing I wanted to bring up was in calculating distances in our galaxy and beyond. If people think it's just a couple thousand years old or something, we see the red shift of these stars, and that tells us about where they are, and then we know how long it takes their light to get to us. And we're getting closer and closer to the center of the galaxy, but that light can take billions of years to get here, if I'm not mistaken.
The light from the center of the galaxy, light tends to travel a light year. So it's a certain amount. It's 3.26 parsecs, which probably means nothing. But that's the unit that astronomers tend to use the most. They're called parsecs. Because our sun is roughly 26,000 light years away from the center of the galaxy, the light would take 26,000 years to get to us. Light from other galaxies, from distant galaxies, can take billions of years to reach us. So what we're seeing is really a picture of the past when we're looking at these distant objects, and really anything. We're seeing the sun as it is about 8 minutes ago. And we're seeing our galactic center, like I said, about 26,000 years ago.
Goodness.
Yeah, it's definitely a time-traveling experience.
Right, right. That's hard to take in, isn't it, Earl? Whoa, what did you say?
It blows your mind.
Yeah, it does.
The math is just incredible, but it's such a great thing to study, and we learn more and more each day.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's great what technology has done, and looking back, what astronomers could do 20 years ago, and now what they can do by lofting more advanced satellites into the atmosphere or above the atmosphere.
Could I ask one brief follow-up question?
Yeah.
How did they find out at way back, maybe this was covered, I'm sorry, but how did they find out that we really are part of a galaxy? I mean, that just seems incredible for us standing here back a couple hundred years to know that those aren't just random stars up there, but there's our galaxy and then billions of other galaxies.
Yeah, that's a pretty big portion of the article. It's it took a lot of different observations throughout decades, really, to figure out that we're even in a galaxy, because we didn't know that other galaxies existed until about 1930. So they knew, starting in the 1800s, that there was whatever we are in tends to have more stars around that Milky Way path that you see and less stars when you get farther from that path. So they eventually started figuring out that, okay, we're in some sort of disc-shaped thing. As time went on, they found blobby objects in the sky, which they called nebulae, and different clouds. But observations really by Edwin Hubble using the Hooker 100-inch telescope atop Mount Wilson really showed that those objects that they saw as clouds are a lot farther away than could be possible if it was in our actual galaxy. So that's when they realized that there are other galaxies out there. We're not the only one, or we're not the only big object. So it's definitely, it took quite a while to come to that conclusion, but by about 1930, they knew that we are in something called a galaxy and that there are many others out there.
Thanks very much.
Thanks, Earl, for your call. We go next to Greg from Egg Harbor. Hi, Greg.
Hi, good morning.
Hi.
Good morning.
Hey, thanks so much for having a great program on such a neat topic and such an articulate guest. My question is, are we now assuming that there are black holes at the center of all galaxies?
Research has definitely showed that all galaxies do have black holes. And those black holes vary in sizes. So a galaxy such as the Milky Way and as Andromeda are very large galaxies, so they have supermassive black holes on the order of millions to billions of solar masses. And when I say a solar mass, it's the mass of our sun. Smaller, you know, the dwarf galaxies and medium-sized galaxies tend to have smaller black holes in the center.
And is that the only place a black hole can exist? Is that the center of a
No. Massive stars. So our star, as we say, it's one solar mass, but stars that are bigger than 8 times our sun's mass, these are high-mass stars, and their process of stellar evolution leads to a very different ending. Because they're so massive, eventually they can end up completely... They could completely explode and shed everything out. They can implode into a black hole, which is about, it's much smaller than a supermassive black hole. It's going to be somewhere around the mass of our sun. So all galaxies, well, not all galaxies, but many galaxies can have these things called stellar mass black holes because really they just originated from a very massive star.
Okay, well, thanks so much. I didn't realize we had come to that conclusion. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Thanks for the call. And just based on how many we know about, how many do you think there are? How many galaxies do you think there are?
It's pretty similar to the guess of the number of stars in our galaxy. We don't know. I mean, billions and billions, hundreds of billions galaxies, because... I don't know if you've seen the Hubble Ultra Deep Field image, but that was released a number of years ago. Astronomers with the Hubble Space Telescope looked toward a completely, well, what they thought was a completely blank region of the sky, and just stared at that for hours.
Mm.
And what they found were thousands of galaxies in that supposedly blank region. So there are a whole lot of galaxies out in our universe.
Thanks very much for your call, and let's go next to Kurt from Manitowoc. Hi, Kurt.
Great program. Say, I'm curious about the supposed meteor impact in 2029 and 2039, I believe. I wonder if your guest would have any information or speculation on that.
I think so. I'm definitely not... not too knowledgeable in asteroids but or meteors, but I think what you're talking about is Apophis, which is an asteroid that is expected to come very close to Earth, a flyby quite close in 2029. And if it hits a certain region, they call it a keyhole, a specific place that has just the right gravitational tug from Earth and from the other objects in the solar system, it could alter that trajectory so that, I don't know, it's sometime in the 30s or the 40s, it could potentially, could maybe hit Earth. But it has to get that just the right gravitational pull, which, you know, it's a very small chance that that could happen.
Well, then they say in the next 10 years after, the chance is a little stronger or probable. I'm curious why we don't know about, why we haven't heard about this earlier, like in the year 2018, or where's the trajectory of this thing at that time? Is it getting closer and closer each 10 years?
I think what, again, the last time I heard anything really about Apophis or this, what I think this asteroid is, was maybe like 3 or 4 years ago. So I'm just kind of remembering this from then. But it, usually these objects, they're not the whole time really close to Earth. So its orbit is large enough and not circular so that I'm not sure when the last time it came near us, but it may be... even in human history, didn't. It could have started from very far out in the solar system, past Pluto, past Kuiper Belt objects, came in and will approach near the Earth in 2029. But
given its orbit, that's why, you know, it doesn't come by every 10 years. The only reason, so objects, spacecraft, when they do flybys, they have to hit a certain like gravitational interaction, a certain point where the gravity between Earth and the other objects in the solar system is just right to affect their orbits. And it's the same thing with this.
And then we're plumb out of time. Thank you very much, Kurt, for your call. Thank you, Liz, so much for your knowledge and all your enthusiasm.
Thank you.
It was fun.
Yeah, thank you.
Our guest, Liz Cruzy, she's associate editor of Astronomy Magazine and the author of the piece that's in the October issue, cover story of the October issue of Astronomy, The Milky Way, After a Centuries-Long Mystery, Scientists Have Found Our Galaxy's True Shape. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour, and thanks to John Treader for on-air production. Thanks to Rob Schroeder for producing the first hour, and to John for on-air production the first hour as well. Tomorrow, just a reminder, during this time period, The Heart of Power, Health and Politics in the Oval Office, a fascinating book looking at healthcare reform all the way back to Harry Truman. So stay tuned for that. And have a lovely Labor Day. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network.